Good morning, golfers. My name is Woody Lashin. I'm here on the On Par radio show with Anthony Scorsia. We're having a little technical difficulties this morning trying to get our guest, John Huggins, on the line. But it's a beautiful morning for golf. I think one of the first nice mornings we've had to go teed up on a weekend in a while. So I'm hoping all of you are on your way out to the links. We had a few tournaments going on this week. The Met PGA was held at Muttontown in the rain and the cold, and Tim Pitts won. Congratulations, Tim. That's great. We're very happy that our Kirk Ogori finished in the Elite Eight, played very, very well, and congratulations, Kirk. The Richardson Invitational, which is an amateur invitational at Seawayne, run by LIGA, was supposed to be held this week, and unfortunately, it had to be postponed due to the rain that we got. So hopefully we'll have that tournament at some point in September. And coming up this week, there's a Long Island Open qualifier at Bethpage Red on Wednesday. And for those of you who want to go out and watch some good golf, there's a lot of good players that will be out there on Wednesday trying to qualify for the Long Island Open, which is out at the Bridge this year. So you want to go watch some good golf on a great golf course, Bethpage Red. Come on out on Wednesday and watch.
All right, Woody, I'm with you. And after a little calling card technical difficulties, we have golf writer on the line, John Huggins. John, how are you doing?
Hello.
Hey, John, how you doing? Sorry about that.
That's all right.
So glad to have you back on the program. John Huggins, for those of you who don't know, writes for Golf World, Golf Digest, a Scotsman, one of my favorite writers in the business, to be honest with you. I know we're not supposed to play favorites, but...
You play favorites all the time.
I do. John is a straight shooter, and love to have him on the program and look forward to having him on the program again, probably U.S. Open time. John, I want to start off with a little bit of news that's been going on, as you would say, on your side of the water hazard. A man named Donald Trump has made a lot of news on your side. Dune Beg, obviously the controversy with the with his course, and now is fighting the government with the wind farms, and now Turnberry. What's your opinion of Donald Trump, and more to the point, do you think he's good for golf?
Well, I'm a bit mystified by his problem with the wind farms, because that wasn't exactly a secret. I mean, we people in Scotland, we had an election 2 or 3 years ago now, and part of the Scottish National Party's manifesto was a commitment to wind farms. They won the election, so presumably most of the people in Scotland were in favour. So for him to come along and express some surprise at what's going on up at Aberdeen is a bit odd, to say the least. And I think the way he's treated people up there hasn't gone down too well. Mm-hmm. In certain quarters either. I mean, I'm not sure, you know, anybody loves golf more than I do, but I don't think we should be building golf courses on land where people are building their homes and don't want to leave. I think they come higher on the priority list than some golf course, no matter how good it is. But having said all that, I mean, he's obviously got lots of money to spend. Our economy is not the greatest at the moment, and I know Turnberry was struggling before he came along and bought the place last week. So it depends on your point of view, I would say, whether or not he's good for golf.
Yeah, I was wondering, as a retail golfer, I mean, for me, I don't know if it makes a difference. For the economy, okay, I could understand that. But, you know, he tends to be a little bit of a bull in the china shop. I'm just wondering sometimes, you know, he had talked about Greg Norman not being able to really utilize the land in Dune Beg because of the snail, and now he's saying we're going to get the permits to basically do whatever we want. You know, I don't know, you know, part of me feels like here's a guy, he's getting the PGA, he's got the Women's Open, now he's got Turnberry, which obviously his name will be on by the time he gets back in the, and it's turn in the rota. Is this a guy who's really aspirations is to be in the World Golf Hall of Fame? Is he trying to buy his way into the World Golf Hall of Fame if that's what he wants his legacy to be?
I think the World Golf Hall of Fame's got some some pretty dubious characters in there already, so he probably wouldn't stand out too much. But I think what was noticeable last week when he purchased, or the announcement was made on the Turnberry purchase, was that he was very quick to say that he wouldn't do anything to the golf course, the Open Championship course, without consulting it first with the RNA. So even the Donald knows his limits. I mean, I think if he was to take on the RNA and start messing with Turnberry, there's a very good chance that there would never be another Open there, I would have thought, especially when they've got other options going on at the moment. The rumour is that Port Rush is going to be maybe coming back onto the rota, and Royal Post Call in Wales is also making moves in that direction. So the RNA could afford to lose Turnberry, if you like, without, too much consternation on their end. But mm-hmm. I think, as I say, it was significant that the Donald wasn't big enough to say that he was just going to build fountains and, lakes and all the rest of whatever else he does. And he's normally, when he builds a golf course or buys a golf course, he was quick to say that the RNA are in charge when it comes to the Open. So I thought that was quite significant.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We just reached our first commercial, or our second commercial at this point. We'll be back. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Terry Landscaping is an award-winning designing building landscape firm serving Long Island for over two decades. Located in Brightwaters, we are owner-operated and proud of the superb relationships we maintain with our customers. The services we provide will ensure that all phases of your project will be completed to your satisfaction. Contact us at 631-968-4882. That's 631-968-4882 to learn more about how we can transform your property into something of beauty and lasting value.
It's here at last, golf season. South Shore Golf in Oakdale presents Mega Demo Day on Monday, June 13th, 4 to 8 p.m. at the Timber Point Golf Course. You'll have the opportunity to hit new clubs for 2011. TaylorMade, Ping, Titleist, Cobra, Mizuno, Callaway, and Nike. Make sure you get down here for your chance to win a brand new TaylorMade R11 driver. Whether you play golf or you're just learning, how about getting fit for clubs by their professional and certified staff? Also, a PGA trade-in value for used clubs to be applied for new products, so bring those old clubs down. South Shore Golf also specializes in golf club repair, regripping, and PGA golf instruction. They will not be undersold. They will match all local prices. For more information, call South Shore Golf, 631-563-2025, 631-563-2025, or check them out online at southshoregolf.net. Heading out east? How about a quick and easy stop for all your golf needs? Let South Shore Golf take your game to the next level.
To John Huggin, international golf writer. John, I got a question for you. It's a real, I think, in-depth one, but there's a lot of golf initiatives out there to try and grow the game. Drive, chip, and putt, which we just saw at the Masters, first tee, etc. If you were the grow the golf game of golf czar, what would you be doing differently?
Well, there's one big thing that gets in the way of growing the game, if you want to put it that way. It's the golf club system is inherently an exclusive system. It's not an inclusive system, especially on the high-end clubs. It's built to keep people out, not bring people in. So if you were going to do anything, I would bring in golfing communism, if you like. I'd expand all golf clubs and make every golf course in the world public and reasonably priced. That's the way to grow the game.
Wow, that's a good one. I don't think it's going to happen, though.
No, it's not.
No, we John and I have a history of a lot of pie in the sky stuff. But John, your take on the USGA and the RNA and protecting the game. I was talking to Woody earlier, and I said I kind of had the feeling that if the RNA and the USGA were parents of the game of golf, then we would have called Child Protective Services on them already at this point in their lack of doing exactly that, protecting the game. Your thoughts on that?
Well, it's certainly the case that if we were starting over tomorrow, we wouldn't be electing these people that you mentioned there to take charge and run our affairs for us. I mean, the whole thing's a mess at the moment in terms of participation is falling, and I'm sure the economy's got quite a bit to do with that, but also, this equipment and the ball. I mean, the amount of money that's been spent on golf courses to get them to a length that can at least semi-challenge the professionals. And by the way, length, if you give the professionals the frying pan drivers and a nuclear-charged ball that they've got now, length doesn't really make any difference to them. I mean, the U.S. Open next month is going to be played on a golf course that's 7,500 yards long, but that's not going to be the thing that's going to make it difficult for the pros. It's going to be difficult because of the greens at Pinehurst and then probably the pin positions. Length to the top professionals means nothing. But I mean, to get back to the original point, that's where the money that's been wasted. I mean, it's incredible. If you could just knock 10% or 15% off the length that a golf ball goes, the professionals would be able to play these courses the way they were designed to be played, and not in a way that, you know, that is foreign, I would imagine, to most of the golf course, the people who designed the courses originally. I mean, if you think about Augusta, I mean, I can't imagine if Alistair McKenzie was to come back to life tomorrow and he was taken to Augusta National, he'd be appalled at what he sees there now. It's nothing, there's hardly any resemblance to the golf course that he designed back in the 1930s. And I think the game at the top level has been diminished by all of that. And the thing is that for you and I, the golf that you and I play, I mean, the technology doesn't really make that much difference. I mean, the horrible truth that none of the equipment companies want to tell you, of course, is that because you and I are basically flawed as golfers, our swings are not quite what they should be, probably. That's a safe assumption, because if they were any better, we'd be on the tour, you and I. But the thing is, if you've got a flawed swing, it doesn't really matter what equipment you've got. You're really never going to be that good at golf. But that's the dirty little secret that nobody ever wants to tell you.
John, so are you saying, John, that you think we need to have like two golf balls, one for the tour and one for regular golfers?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the authorities, the RNA and the USGA, they come down against what they call bifurcation, which is, you know, two separate sets of rules. But the great irony, of course, and I think I've said this before, maybe on this show, that the great irony is that by the fact that they've done nothing, basically nothing about the equipment, and certainly the ball in particular, they've created a situation whereby the game that you and I play has never been more divorced from the game that's played at tour level. They've created bifurcation by doing nothing. It'd be far better to if they really want us all to be playing the same game, to haul the ball back a bit, because the ball, you know, the distance the players, the speed that the professionals swing at, they get a huge benefit from this new technology that you and I, swing speeds that you and I presumably swing at, we're getting nothing like that benefit. So the gap just gets bigger and bigger and bigger.
As evidence with, I believe, Rory had some monster drive that was like 385 yards yesterday at Quail Hollow.
Well, that's right. I mean, and the drive that Bubba hit over the corner at the 13th at Augusta National in the final round this year was extraordinary, and I'm sure some people are quite entertained by that, but the point is that might be the best golf hole in the world in terms of strategy and, you know, everything that goes with it, and it's just ruined because, you know, people are going to start hitting drives like that consistently, and I would imagine that the next generation will have even more players like Bubba who can hit it that far. That hole is going to be a drive and a flick, and the strategy and design and the concept of it is completely lost.
Yes, and I would say, I would take it a step further, that it's not only the professionals, but it's probably has now reached or at least encroached into the what I call the professional amateur. I mean, when I went to the Walker Cup here on Long Island last year at National Golf Links of America, which everybody knows is a world-renowned links course, and so they had to make number one, which they call the Valley, it was a drivable par four. Number two, drivable. Number three, the famous cape hole that the C.B. McDonald had, Seth Rayner, had replicated. They had to move the tees next to the number two green. So they got the boys weren't teeing off on three tee until they had cleared the three green, and we had to hold. The officials had to hold the guys on 2T so that they, when they drove the green, they weren't hitting it into this makeshift tee box. So it's amazing. I don't know. It's a little stupefying to me that it's carried on this far.
You know,
well, that just goes to my original point. I mean, the whole design philosophy of that golf course sounds like it was lost. I mean,
oh, without question.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a tragedy. I think we should be preserving these great monuments to the game. I mean, the perfect example I keep going back to is the old course at St. Andrews. I mean, everyone, when I start rabbiting on about how far the ball goes and all the rest of it, they always say, well, what point would you go back to? And my answer is always the same. You go back to the point where they started to mess with the old course at St. Andrews. That's where it should have stopped.
Mm-hmm.
That golf course should never be touched. I mean, that's the ultimate monument to all that's good in golf. And now we've got a situation whereby, you know, the next Open Championship will be there next year, and we'll be back to some of the tees will not even be on the premises. They'll be actually outside the boundaries of the golf course, and the pin positions will be getting ever sillier. I mean, and that's my one fear actually for next month at Pinehurst, is that in the absence of rough, the USGA are going to have to resort to ever sillier pin positions, closer and closer to the edge of the green, simply to keep or to protect the great god that is par, as far as they're concerned. And it could get a little bit silly if they're not careful.
You know, what I would say to you, John, is that, you know, as an equipment guy, I think the actual changes in technology actually, certainly in the past 5-6 years, affected the higher handicap golfer much, much more than it has the tour player. I mean, the tour player has not seen an increase in distance, where we are seeing it much easier for the higher handicap golfer to get the ball in the air and hit the ball straight.
All for that. That's another great case for, if that's true, it's another great case for bifurcation. I mean, that's why we should be playing with two different sets of clubs and two different types of ball.
Yeah, I mean, I just look at it like, you know, go play national. Well, if we go play national, the three of us, we're going to play it from the regular back tees, and we're going to enjoy the hell out of it because it's a great golf course and it's going to really challenge us. For those few elite guys that we obviously, that's we watch on TV, they're able to destroy it because they are, you know, able to hit the ball so much further than we are.
Well, actually, I feel sorry for these guys to an extent. I mean, I'm friendly with Jeff Ogilvie, who plays on the tour, and he goes home to Melbourne in Australia at the back end of every year to play in the Australian Open and all sorts. And he tells me that he goes and has a few games with his mates, his old mates, school friends, when he's home. And basically, as he said, that he can't play. He can't play with them anymore unless he hits a 5-iron off every tee. I mean, the game that he plays is now so divorced from the game that they play that they both of them, both sets, he and his pals, they can't enjoy the game at the same time. They're playing completely different games.
And that, I can't think of that example as probably a greater violation of the spirit of the game of golf, wouldn't you say?
Well, absolutely. I mean, that's one of the great aspects of the game is the social side of it, is that you go around and you chat and you talk to people and you get to know people and all the rest of it. And that's, you know, don't get me started on golf carts. That's one of the big downsides of golf carts, of course, is that you don't get to talk between tee and green.
My guest is John Huggan. You can read him at The Scotsman, Golf Digest, Golf World. He's on Twitter, @JohnHuggan. We're going to take one more break. We'll be back. We'll wrap things up with John. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Pete's Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit petesgolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891 and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
ABC 123 Golf. ABC 123 Golf is a summer program developed by Mike Wade, PGA. ABC 123 Golf offers instruction, practice, and play activities designed to give juniors the necessary knowledge and experience to become lifelong golfers. Improving the playing ability of the junior golfer is our primary objective. In addition, ABC 123 Golf stresses the concept of total youth development throughout the program. Please visit abc123golf.net or call us at 516-385-9294. That's 516-385-9294.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. My guest is one of my favorite scribes in the game of golf, John Huggan, writes with The Scotsman, Golf Digest, Golf World. John, we got a couple of minutes left. I just wanted to just talk about the stepping down of Peter Dawson. What do you think his legacy will be? And quite frankly, what do you think is the good or bad? And what do you think the future of the RNA is going to be?
Well, I think I did a column for this week's Golf World on Peter Dawson's imminent retirement in September next year. So it's not quite imminent, but I think his by the time he goes, he will have, the point I made was that he's presided over the two most important events in the history of the Royal and Ancient Golf Club. The first was 10 years ago, was splitting the members' golf club away from the corporate body that runs the Open Championship and you know, runs the equipment side of things, and they needed to get the members away from the prospect of being sued by Ping and Callaway and all the rest of them, as happened 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, of course, is the imminent vote in September on whether or not they should allow women into the Royal and Ancient Golf Club. Those two events, will be his legacy, especially if the vote goes through. I can't imagine. It would be disastrous if for the RNA if it didn't go through. I think it's got huge financial implications for the Open Championship in terms of their corporate backers pulling out if they didn't allow the women in. So, as I say, those two events are what Peter Dawson's time at the RNA will be defined by, I would imagine.
What would you say his biggest fail was?
His biggest fail was is the equipment. I mean, I think... he himself has said that it's the most intellectually challenging aspect of his job, and I think that combined with the messing with the old course at St Andrews, which I still haven't forgiven him for,
yeah.
I think those are the two things that history will look back and say that he didn't quite get the job done, I would have thought.
Well, John, thank you so much. I apologize for the little mix-up in the beginning here, but we got rolling, and it's always a pleasure to have you on, and hopefully you'll want to be on again.
Yeah, my pleasure, anytime.
Great stuff. Thank you very much, John.
Thank you.
Have a good day. All right, that was John Huggin, writes for The Scotsman, Golf Digest, Golf World. He's just one of the best. I think his economy of speech, his ideas about the future of the game of golf, how it should be versus how the way it is, and the fact that he's a straightforward and I know you, Woody, like myself, and probably a lot of New Yorkers like a straightforward guy.
I think we could have talked to him for hours, actually, because he's not going to pull any punches.
No.
You could ask him some tough questions, and he's going to give you a direct answer. He's not going to dance around the subject.
No, I
like that a lot.
No, and you can tell that that his readied response is just evidence that he's thought about it. And he's made up his mind about it, and not that his opinion is the end of the thing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I disagree a little bit on the equipment issue, because I do think that it's actually helped the higher handicap golfer way more than it's helped the tour pro. The problem is the tour pro has gotten in better shape, and therefore they're stronger, and therefore they're able to hit the golf ball further. But the equipment has certainly helped the average guy.
Without the benefits of it, to you know, at some point to myself. I mean, I'm not by any stretch of the imagination a terrible golfer, but I think the point that he made, and maybe, you know, to counter you, and maybe there's some credence to that, is that it makes it all the more reason to maybe go to a bifurcation, because these guys are only going to keep getting bigger and better, and maybe that's the idea of one set of rules. Maybe these guys have to just let it go.
You know, I don't know if I get it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the beauty of golf is that you can go out and hit a shot that a tour player hit, because
you're
using the same equipment, the same stuff. You're playing the same golf course, even though it's not the same.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if losing that is worth it. And I'll be quite honest with you, I'm not sure that's going to help grow the game of golf. In order to grow the game of golf, we've got to get young people playing golf.
Mm-hmm.
And I think his original point, as far as access. You know, if there's no access, I mean, first tee is an incredible program, right?
Right.
But if you went through the first tee program and then you can't get access to the golf course when you're in your 20s, you're not going to go play golf.
Communist golf. I like it.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's going to work either. But
well, certainly not going to work here on Long Island, that's for sure. We got.
I'm not sure I'm a big fan of the communists, so.
No, but I mean, his point is his point. I understand his point, and he's right. It's we have limited access in terms of, you know, there's public and there's private. And by that nature, there's limited access.
Well, I think even, I mean, obviously in our area here, we're predominantly private.
Right.
But if you look at most of the country, mm-hmm. golf is very accessible public. Mm-hmm. But it's expensive accessible.
Right.
And that's the problem. It's not so much that it's not accessible. Well, and golf's accessible, but it's still expensive.
Yes.
And to practice is expensive. To buy the equipment is expensive. And it takes a lot of time. I just think certainly smarter people than me are going to figure out the solution. And if they don't, we'll be in trouble.
Well, I think inevitably, I think I'm still, and probably not a lot of people like it, but I'm still one of these guys who thinks golf's been around, golf will be around. It's going to change. The economic model might change and how we decide to, what a lot of companies are trying to do, and that is profit off of the game of golf. But I think that the game is always going to continue to survive.
No question.
And
no
question. And we survived this show after a brutal start.
I tried to fill in there for you.
You did. You did a nice job, my friend. I think I mucked it up when I came in and with my entrance. But I thought you.
Well, folks,
it.
That's what happens when you have live radio.
That's right. That's
and
right.
Technical difficulties.
We needed a mulligan.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, hopefully, we got one.
And thank God you were here, Woody. I really appreciate it. Folks, thanks for listening in. For those of you here on your way to the golf course or enjoying a cup of joe at home or a cup of tea across the pond, thank you very much. We appreciate you tuning in. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia and today, Woody Lashin.
The Long Island Golf Association is a nonprofit organization of 81 private and public clubs. The LIGA conducts 15 championships annually and works closely with the Long Island Caddy Scholarship Fund. The scholarships are granted to young men and women who are employed at member clubs. For more information on how you can participate in a championship, or if you'd like to donate your time as a volunteer, please call the LIGA at 516-746-1015. That's 516-746-1015. 1015, or visit us at www.longislandgolf.org. Is your inspection due? Are you tired of listening to that noise your car is making? If you're looking for a reliable shop to service your car, try A1 Action Auto for all your car service needs. A1 Auto is a New York State certified shop, and owner Ed Terabile has over 25 years of experience. A1 Action Auto is conveniently located off Sunrise Highway in West Islip, so pick up the phone and call A1 Action Auto at 631-321-4242. That's 631-321-4242.